Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
People in Ireland, of course, are still reflecting on the man himself, the Argentinian Jesuit poet who died at the age of 88, and especially reflecting on that visit of his in 2018. It was the first since Pope John Paul in 1979, and just the astonishing difference between then and 2018 when Pope Francis arrived to Dublin, and it seemed like the hierarchy in Ireland were not quite prepared for how badly that visit really went in the end. I'm joined by Independent Councillor Damien O'Farrell, who was part of one of the, this was the most incredible moment, I think, in the visit. He was one of only 8 survivors of clerical abuse, and he met the Pope when that visit happened. It's 2018. He's on the line, a former independent councillor. Damien O'Farrell, good morning to you.
Good morning, Oliver.
That meeting, can you tell us about it? It was 2018. You were expecting quite a lot of people to be in the room, weren't you? But it was very few.
Yeah, I was expecting maybe 50 or 100 people to be there. And
sure.
I think I learned a bit of, was it Italian or Spanish, to make myself heard.
Did you? That was a good idea. Where did it happen?
I was wary. It was in the Papal Nuncio's house in Cabra.
Yes, in the Navan Road in Dublin.
And I was wary to attend at the beginning.
Right.
Because I suppose of all the abuses.
Yeah.
And the trauma, I suppose thousands of people that have happened in Ireland. So I was a bit wary to attend, but I did attend, and I found it I found it a good meeting.
I mean, it's very, very rare for anyone to get face-to-face a meeting with Pope Francis himself, but you got to have conversations with him. And this was very much reflecting the mood in Ireland at the time, wasn't it? Obviously, the gap between John Paul II and 79 and 2018, we've had a huge scandal and cover-up in the church. What the most astonishing part of the meeting was, he seemed to be unaware, didn't he, of the institutional abuses in Ireland.
Yeah, and it's hard for me to put into words, I suppose, how well the survivors of institutional abuse, they painted a picture for Francis, you know, about the depravity, the cruelty. And this is endured by survivors today, and mm-hmm. this impacted my life, you know,
of course,
listen to them. And he wasn't aware of the Magdalen laundries at all, and he was sort of ashamed, but I mean, he hadn't been briefed, you know.
Yeah.
And I think he was disappointed, he was embarrassed about that. He's just a human being, I suppose. There's 1.5 million Catholics in Ireland, but it was he knew it was bad form on his behalf that he wasn't aware of the Magdalens, and he was embarrassed about that, and he was ashamed.
I remember reading, I just read this morning a report from the time. Paul Redmond was also there on behalf of the victims and said he literally, the Pope, that is, had no idea what a Magdalen laundry was, never heard of it. And this was a meeting with 8 survivors, including you, Damien. And Paul Redmond says it ended up with me giving the Pope a 3 to 4 minute crash course through his translator as to the institutions in Ireland. Pope Francis was shocked and taken aback.
That's what happened. And there was a survivor there from institutional abuse as well, from industrial schools. That lady, she painted some picture, you know, and then the Pope the next day, he said that he put it into his homily about survivors,
That's right.
He did that. He apologized. And he also mentioned about the, I think the man, Paul Redmond, mentioned that he felt that it was a mortal sin if he asked after his parents. And the Pope put that to rest, you know. I think he mentioned one of the commandments, to honour their mother and their father. So that was good. But it really was, to listen, as I said, it impacted my life. I went on to work then. I work now for Sage Advocacy.
Yeah.
I'm a project manager. We have a supports for survivors of institutional abuse.
Yes.
And it was really from that meeting that it pushed me in that direction.
A life-changing meeting.
I couldn't
meeting.
Have imagined the abuse and the depravity that these people had to endure back in the time of the institutions.
It was a life-changing meeting for you, essentially, wasn't it? From that point of view.
That's what I mean. This is my heart went out to people. As a victim, I was there as a victim of clerical abuse, but I was shocked by some of the abuses that happened in the institutions as they described them. You know, being sentenced, children being sentenced in court to spend time in an industrial school, a child maybe of 3 or 4. And the Pope, he took this on board. He had tremendous stamina.
Yeah.
And he was very disciplined. And he went around the 8 of us. We all spoke. We could speak as long as we liked, you know, 20 minutes or whatever. There was no rush on anybody. And then he went back through all the, he went back through everybody. He recounted exactly what you said, exactly.
Really?
And I thought that was great, very disciplined, great stamina. He talked about clericalism. He said that clericalism was the cause of all the abuses. That's what he felt. Mm-hmm. And then he mentioned, which is, I thought was interesting, traditionalists. And he mentioned traditionalists in the course of the conversation about five or six times. And every time he mentioned the word traditionalists, he'd shudder. He'd go, oh, traditionalists. Wow. Oh. You know, so that, I think that sent a message of the pressures that he was under. He was just one person. I think that was another part of the meeting.
Yeah.
You see, he was an elderly gentleman. He's sitting in front of you. He's just one person. He's a human being. And his time in leadership was limited.
Did you feel like he was in charge?
I'd say I felt he was competing to be in charge with the traditionalists, mm-hmm. you know, and his time in leadership was limited. But he did, like, he was the first pope. I think he defrocked a cardinal, Cardinal McCarrick, the following year. That had never been done before. Look, there was a lot. There's a lot. There's a lot still to do. He brought the baton further than any pope, I think, before him.
He did, yeah.
But possibly not far enough. But I don't want to, as I said, the meeting for me, it impacted my life. As I said, he was very warm-hearted. There was genuine compassion and a very humane feeling, a humane person. You know, and he was sorry. And he was angry at the perpetrators as well. And he was angry at the institutions that let it go on. That didn't stop the abusers, you know, just as much as the perpetrators. And he called them caca, which the interpreter mentioned means human excrement.
That's the polite way of putting it.
Well,
yeah,
he used caca. That word. He was very, very annoyed.
He used a lot of colourful language. But Damien O'Farrell, thank you so much, because that was a really important meeting and nicely recounted. And good luck to you in your continued work, because we've a long reckoning to do with this story. But that's Damien O'Farrell there. I want to go to Father Tony Flannery now, who's speaking to us from Newport in County Tipperary. Good morning to you, Father Tony.
Good morning, Oliver.
You're a Redemptorist priest, and of course, people will remember you were forbidden to practice by the superiors in Rome. I think it's 2012, wasn't it? Because you spoke
2012. That's correct. Yes.
Remind us of the issues you were speaking up on, which led to you being silenced.
Actually, there were, nowadays there are common parlance in the church issues around priesthood, around equality for women, around Catholic sexual teaching, all those sorts of areas. But like everybody is talking about them now. If it had, it was 2012, as you said, Oliver.
Yeah.
If it had happened a year later, it wouldn't have happened because Francis would have been in.
Right.
And Francis straight away put a stop to all that nonsense of suspending and, you know, not allowing people to speak their minds. He brought an enormous freedom to the church in that sense.
You still, though, have that effective ban, don't you, on you to
well,
this
I
day?
I have, yeah. That hasn't changed in my situation at all.
How could he not lift that, or how could the forces around him?
I don't hold that against Francis at all, Oliver. Like, in terms of what Francis had to deal with, and some of it was illustrated there in your previous conversation, an individual case in a little island in the west of Europe, it couldn't possibly relate with him. What he did, as I said, he changed the atmosphere. He created a sense of freedom, a sense of openness. He told us we could speak without fear.
Mm-hmm. You were so literally ahead of your time, Tony.
He had done the necessary there. My case then should have been dealt with at a lower level. It wasn't, and I'm still where I am. But look, Oliver, I'm 78 and I'm grand. And who would want to go back into ministry at 78 and in this particular time in the church? I'm grand.
There's plenty of priests actually your age, isn't there? Still saying Mass, but you can't say Mass, can you?
Not publicly, no. No.
Extraordinary. Absolutely extraordinary. Yeah. Are you angry about it?
I suppose I was a bit at the beginning.
Yeah.
But look, I've long left that behind me and I've moved on. And I would like, but I know this won't happen, like the process, by which I was dealt with was so utterly without even the slightest vestiges of justice and fair play.
Really,
I'd like an acknowledgement of that before I die, but I don't expect that will happen. And I've learned a long time ago, Oliver, hanging on to bitterness and anger, it utterly destroys you.
You can't carry a hot pot around with you.
Largely left all that behind. And I thank God for Francis. I think he has been a wonderful gift to the church, and his legacy will last forever. Yeah. And as far as I'm concerned, he did as much as I could possibly have hoped from him.
Where exactly would you like that apology or at least clarification to come from, Tony? Directly from Rome or from even your own diocese?
No, you see, I'm a religious. I would like the general government of the Redemptress
to
deal with that situation. And maybe in conjunction with the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. That's my dog growling in the background.
I thought it was his creaking door.
Somewhere, maybe he disapproves of what I'm seeing. Yeah. So anyway, that won't happen. No.
You're not expecting that to happen. And you had plenty of representation here, didn't you, from very senior people in Ireland?
I had.
Who wrote to the Pope on your behalf?
I know that Mary McAleese did. I know that Linda Kelly did.
While he was Taoiseach.
Lots of other people. But look, I don't hold anything against Francis. Quite the opposite.
You're a forgiving man.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I must go.
You have to go. You've got local radio calling you.
Commitment to another radio.
Thank you so much, Father. Likewise. Good luck. That's Father Tony Flannery in Tipperary now, and I want to cross over to the west of Ireland and to Ireland West Airport, Knock Airport, which a lot of people know about. So that's where Pope Francis landed in 2018, and there to greet him at the bottom of the stairs as he came down from the aircraft, Pope Force One or whatever it's called. Mary McCarthy, good morning.
Morning, Oliver. Thank you for having me on.
Not at all. Tell us why you were there to actually greet the Pope when he arrived.
Oh, gosh. We were one of the lucky families. My husband is operations and commercial manager at Ireland West Airport. And Father Richard Gibbons had requested from the Pope's people that he was going to meet a family. Mm-hmm. And we had word that we were going to be the family that was going to wave him off from Ireland West on the evening after he visited Knock Shrine, but it got quickly changed that we were going to be the family to greet him.
Wow.
So we were very lucky, John and myself and our four kids, Saoirse Ann, Michael, Ruby and Robin. So they could not believe that, nobody could believe that we were going doing it. Even my own parish priest, Father Tommy Johnson, we told him that week and he was like,
bad jealous.
Really? You know, but yeah. I told him
every
that
one of you in the family.
Pardon?
Every single one of you in the family.
Every single one of us got to meet him, Oliver. Yeah, and we all got to shake his hand. We got briefed before we went out on the tarmac at Ireland West Airport just to be nice and greet him and not to be anyways forward. But he shook all our hands and we got a rosary bead from him and he told us to pray for him. He asked the kids, do you pray? And we said yes, and he said, please pray for me. And Saoirse Ann had handed him flowers to bring to Knock Shrine. Mm-hmm. And then I seized my opportunity and I gave him a kiss on each cheek. But I would be like that anyway, Oliver. So I was told not to go.
You were told not to do
man.
That.
But I have a picture to prove. He seemed okay about it.
Yeah, he didn't care about protocol at all, did he?
So. I don't think so. He seems like a man that was just like us. There was a great aura about him of peace and joy. I think he was very happy to be here in the west of Ireland and to visit Knock Shrine. Mm-hmm. And every Christmas since we met him, we sent him a Christmas card. Yeah. And we always got a little card back from the Vatican, which I keep dearly, and really? With the rosary beads, which was very special. We were very lucky.
Did you get into any trouble for breaking the protocol?
Listen, I think actually we started following him around at the airport after. We were like his friends then. Yeah. And I remember an umbrella came down in front of me. It was probably his security going, now you've had enough.
Yeah.
you have followed him enough. But it was just like, you know, speaking to you, he was just like anyone else. And that's what I take from it. I'm sad that he's gone. But I do take peace that it was over Easter that he passed on.
Wasn't that amazing that he held on for the Easter?
Yeah, I think definitely he would be definitely at peace. I think he pushed himself to say goodbye to everyone in the world. And like how such a great man to be. He was the head of the world, you know. Yeah, he was the hope Catholic for the faith, world. Yeah. And I think that will live on from his passing. I think he definitely will be a saint in time. I think definitely.
Well, he was clever. Yeah, we were very lucky. Most of the cardinals who get to elect the next pope, so it might follow along the same liberal lines.
Absolutely. And I hope that maybe before he did pass it, he probably might have had some influence of the next man that takes over, and that I'm hoping that he's someone like him, because he was just like us. He thought about everybody and he wanted to help. I think if he had more time, he would have helped a lot of people, and especially with what went on in the church, that he would have been the beacon of hope, definitely.
You might find yourself hugging and kissing another pope on the steps in
Ireland.
Well,
listen, I don't know what. Will they invite me back?
Yeah, will you be allowed to be fine? Well, the kids were all under 10, weren't they? So do they all remember some of them?
They were all under 10. Yeah, they were all under 10 and they were absolutely, well, starstruck, definitely. They all have their beads and we do say our prayers for him. Like, because that's what he asked. He wasn't preaching to them or anything like that. You know, it was just pray for me and that was it. And yeah, they remember it very fondly. And we've the pictures. Oh, they're all around the house.
it's like
a little shrine to
world leaders like that. Mary McCarthy, thanks so much for that.
Oliver, thank you for talking to me. Take care.
Take it easy. Bye-bye. That's Mary McCarthy there in Ireland West. And the Vatican has now said in a statement that Pope Francis' funeral will be held on Saturday. That will be at 10 a.m. At St. Peter's Basilica. That's 9 o'clock in the morning here, Irish time. And that's formally announced now. So that's in line with what the expectations were. He was going to canonise the millennial saint, wasn't he, Acuti, over the weekend. So tens of thousands of young people had flights booked and accommodation booked for this weekend in the Vatican. That's quite remarkable as well. So they will all be flooding into Rome later in the. And it looked like a much younger audience than you expect, because they were there for the millennial saint. He was a website builder, and he believed to have performed miracles. That's what he was going to be made a saint this weekend. It's been postponed now for the next pope. So we'll see that. Another message saying you had a wonderful guest there, Father Tony Flannery, who was far ahead of his time, precisely a year ahead of his time, wasn't he? Because as he said, if he had just not spoken out until Pope Francis was on the seat, he wouldn't maybe have lost his right to say Mass and other ministries and so on that he was hoping to do. What you're forgetting, Oliver, is the utter shambles of the organising of the Mass in the Phoenix Park in 2018, which led to the lower numbers. For weeks, the public were being told of how far they would have to walk to get there. That's right, there was a lot of fear-mongering. There was no transport. It was also very wet weather at the time, but the people who went there enjoyed it for sure. And there was also the big concert in Croke Park, but there were a lot of empty seats. I was there myself. And of course, the plan to have the Pope going through waving crowds in Dublin city centre. They shortened the route and sped up the Pope Mobile because of the few numbers that turned out. It was such a visceral difference from 79 to 2018. But he learned a lot of Ireland about Ireland in his time there. There'll be more coverage of this, of course, after 10 o'clock this morning. We might even come to it ourselves before the end of the programme. But we're going to go to the young debut novelist, Sean Hewitt, right after these.